Good morning. Anybody see the comics this morning in the Oregonian? Yeah, I thought at first I was like the only person who noticed that Easter and April Fool's Day were coming on the same day this year. You know, never think you're the only person who's noticing something. But I'm glad we started today with our Enter, Rejoice, and Come In. That's just such a bouncy little song. It's kind of really silly. It seems a little bit like a jack-in-the-box, you know. There's actually supposed to be a clap in there. Today will be a joyful day. Enter, rejoice, and come in. And then it goes the same thing over and over again. I could just see the jack-in-the-box going down and then pop, coming back up. Yeah. Well, before he faced the cross on Good Friday, Jesus had to contend with a number of other traps that had been set for him. Here's one, kind of a verbal trap. And they sent to him some of the Pharisees and some of the Herodians to entrap him in his talk. And they came and said to him, "Teacher, we know that you are true and care for no man, for you do not regard the position of men, but truly teach the way of God." Here comes the trick. "Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Should we pay them or should we not?" Trying to gather some incriminating evidence, right? But knowing their hypocrisy, he said to them, "Why put me to the test? Bring me a coin and let me look at it." And they brought one. And he said to them, "Whose likeness and inscription is this?" They said, "Caesar's." And Jesus said to them, "Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." And they were amazed at him. Well, the next reading has to do with the kind of trap that we set for the truth itself when it gets so close that it might amaze or perhaps embarrass us. This is from the philosopher Alain from his book, The Gods. "The modern error is the attempt to find out if religion actually was revealed and where and when and by what evidence we know it. It seems that the revealed idea will be true only insofar as it can be established that the precise circumstances under which it was revealed were real and exactly as they have been reported. This proof cannot be produced because every proof of existence is a proof of experience, and there can be no experience of the past." But there's more to be said. No one asks if the trees really went in search of a king. No one asks if the fox really spoke to the crow. It's a question of a fresh understanding of the idea that lives in the story. If we learn from the story, then it is true in the ways that stories can be true. Stories are true in the ways that stories are true. And music is true in the ways that music is true. Now for some true delight from Deborah with one of the classic Easter pieces of the High Church tradition. That originated on vaudeville, but a lot of us remember it as the theme song for Bugs Bunny once he came on television. April Fools. Well, now, here's a short story from the Gospel of Luke in the New Testament describing Luke's version of the events of what we now call Easter Sunday. Jesus had died around 3 p.m. on Friday after he was nailed to a cross by soldiers of the Roman colonial government. On Sunday morning, the tomb where his body had been buried was found open and empty. After some time, reports started coming in to his disciples and followers that their friend had been seen alive and well, walking and talking in a village near Jerusalem. These people were gathered in a room, feeling scared and excited, talking about all that they'd heard, trying to see if they could make any sense of it all, when, while they were talking of those things, he himself stood in the midst and said to them, "Peace to you." They were startled and terrified, imagining that they saw a ghost, but he asked them, "Why are you disturbed? And why are such doubts arising in your hearts? Look at my hands and my feet. It's I, myself. Touch me and see, for a ghost does not have flesh and bones, as you see me have." And when he said this, he showed them his hands and feet. Since they were still unable to believe for sheer joy and marveled, he asked them, "Do you have any food on hand?" And they gave him a piece of broiled fish, and he took and ate it. While they were talking of those things, he himself appeared. Well, I want to say something right now about stories of Jesus and the tone of voice that they're usually told in. The New Testament translation that I just read follows the old convention of capitalizing all the he's and him's and me's when Jesus speaks or is spoken of, just as it would for God. The idea is to make Jesus sound as much like God as possible, forgetting the humanity that he himself insisted on with such passion. The temptation is then for us to speak the words of Jesus in a voice that sounds like it is controlling the whole world, a weighty voice that makes every word a proclamation. It's also tempting to believe that Jesus really spoke like that, in what a friend of mine calls the stained glass voice. A voice that I, for one, really get tired quickly of listening to. When I get tired, I'm tempted not to listen at all. But who's to say that that's what the voice of Jesus was really like? Who's to say that the real voice wasn't wild, wild with humor, and wild with love? You remember the story of the coin with Caesar's face, right? The trap, trying to see if he's trying to get us into a tax revolt, right? So you remember, "Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, render unto God what is God's." Was it like that, or was it more likely, whose face do you see on the coin? Who's there? "Well, then render unto Caesar what's Caesar's, render unto God what's God's." In other words, Caesar gets a chip of silver, but God gets you. You get me now? The tone of voice has changed the words. Words are not just their definitions. How they're spoken can make all the difference. Easter's a day when someone who has died is not supposed to be preserved in stained glass, but to come alive. Imagine the scene in the story that I read just before Jesus appears to his disciples. People would be saying things like, "Well, you think it could be true? You think it could be true? Could he be alive again? Well, this is nuts. It's going to take some proving for me, by gum. People don't come back from the dead, and if they do, they shouldn't." While they were talking of those things, he himself stood in their midst and said to them, "Peace to you." They were startled and terrified, imagining that they saw a ghost. A cartoonist would probably use two panels for this scene. In one, Jesus would appear in the doorway while everyone in the room has their backs turned, and he would say, "Peace to you." In the next panel, people's heads would be turned, their eyes bugging out, and all we'd see of the person near the door would be his feet way up in the air with a big yow underneath as he did one of those cartoon flips. The Jesus of Easter is a man who does this kind of thing, showing up to have supper with his friends when they all thought he was dead. I get the impression that he enjoys the surprise quite a bit. His friends think they're seeing a ghost. As they cringe in fear, he invites them, "Come on, put your hands on me, touch me, see, for a ghost does not have flesh and bones as you see me have." Seeing that they won't trust their own eyes or hands, he adds what almost seems like a piece of slapstick. He asks, "Do you have any food on hand?" And they gave him a piece of broiled fish, and he took and ate it. Now watch this, folks. You know the cartoon thing where they pull out, put in the fish, and you pull out the bones. It's as if to say, some ghost I am, and my compliments to the chef. Another story that I think of today is the story of the Easter Bunny, who's probably the number one Easter person for most kids, let's face it. My great-grandmother told me and my sister that she'd actually seen him very early one Easter morning when it was still dark. She used to go babysitting to a really old age. She said he was a huge rabbit, over 6 feet tall. And she told this with all the same sincerity in her voice as when she told us how she'd come home twice to a strong scent of a certain kind of tobacco, as if her husband, who'd been dead for over 50 years, had just left the room. And great-grandma tells us this story, she tells us this story. What are we going to do but accept it? 6 feet tall. How big was your Easter Bunny in your imagination? Oh, this is a tiny one? Anybody? Big bun? Anyone else over 6 feet tall? Kind of think of Harvey, people who grew up with the movie Harvey. Does it get around on two legs or four? Two, right, right. Does it talk? He or she? Okay, we got different opinions on this. And this is Portland too. We don't have to be specific. The Easter rabbit is a playful, even tricky creature who sets up hide and seek games for kids while they're sleeping, putting colored eggs in light bulb sockets, potted plants, under sofa pillows, all kinds of surprising places. Sometimes he hides them so well that you're still finding eggs in July. Did that ever happen to you?
Yes.
What's the latest you ever found an egg?
Thanksgiving.
Oh, man. Did you open it? Ooh, the July one. It was like a little amber ball that had just kind of petrified inside. Our children's story mixed Easter and Christmas, but Easter gift-giving is much easier. There's no guessing what people want. There's no concern about repeating yourself. Your basket holds chocolate, rabbits, and eggs, little yellow chicks made of marshmallow peeps, the green and pink plastic straw that cats love to steal and eat and then later give back to us, much as they do with the Christmas tinsel. My wife tells me that she and her sister each received a solid German chocolate rabbit every Easter. Was there anything special that you found in your basket every year?
Yeah, a solid egg, just coconut with chocolate covered, with my name on it.
Oh, with your name on it.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Any other special Easter basket things? Yeah, there's no problem with the repetition. In fact, we kind of expect the repetition there. Yeah. Well, today, like Christmas and Easter, the man and the rabbit stories are running together for me, which may remind you of Bugs Bunny, a rabbit who walks on two legs and talks like a person. When I was in elementary school, my true Sabbath was Saturday, though we weren't Jewish, though clearly Bugs Bunny is, if you listen. And my religion had a lot to do with Saturday morning cartoons. It was my day of healing from school, a place where I got cramped and pinched out of shape for 5 days a week. No sneakers, leather shoes, you know, the drill back then. A child's language lets you say some wonderful things like, we were playing cowboys and Indians and I got killed a little, but Mikey got killed a lot. And school often made me feel a little killed, to tell you the truth. Maybe you felt that way too. But on Saturdays, I would awaken faithfully at 5 or 6 in the morning and turn on the TV. Sometimes I would watch the test patterns for a while to warm up for the cartoons. There used to be an Indian in a feathered headdress or a sort of a target thing, depending on what channel. This was years before there was 24-hour programming. Those test patterns didn't move, but I liked them anyway. When the show started, I was ready. I especially loved to watch Bugs Bunny struggling with one of his regular adversaries like Elmer Fudd or Yosemite Sam. Bugs sometimes has open battles with these guys, or they may try to catch and kill him with some sort of incredibly complicated trap. I wonder why they rely on traps so much. It's as if they want to say, I didn't do it, the trap did it. Wasn't that a clever trap? Must have taken quite a genius to design it, don't you think? There's some fudging of responsibility. And maybe this is because they're never quite sure why they want to kill bugs in the first place. Unless it's for just being Bugs Bunny. Maybe it's how complete he is. How whole and full and enough next to how incomplete and empty they seem to be. He embarrasses them. He embarrasses them. And we get so deadly serious when we're embarrassed, murderous, or maybe suicidal. Seems we'd rather bleed than blush, or have a laugh at our own expense. Well, quite often it looks as if Bugs has had it. He's been blown up by a barrel of TNT as big as a barn, or sunk in a locked chest in a river, or trapped in a cave in some tomb or another. And then miraculously, he gets out. He reappears to the shock and awe of his friends and enemies alike, who sometimes think they're seeing a ghost, and to the delight of children of all ages who know the real Bugs Bunny when they see him, and that he hasn't been killed even a little. One of the best returns come in an episode with the ever-serious Elmer Fudd, who's so confident that he's just killed Bugs that he starts dancing and singing. The wabbit kicked the bucket, the wabbit kicked the bucket, the wabbit kicked the bucket, celebrating the bunny's death. Bugs re-enters from the wings and insinuates himself into the song and dance so smoothly that the two characters sing several choruses together before Elmer realizes that he's dancing with the dead rabbit. Of course, he's startled and terrified and imagines that he's seeing a ghost. As I said before, I often felt a little killed by school and long weekdays of what sometimes seemed like the world pitted against a child. But after watching Bugs pass through his pursuer's traps and make his returns from certain death, I felt enlivened, refreshed, ready to play again, ready even to face another week of school. In a word, I also felt resurrected. My point is that resurrection is not really a somber affair at all. Easter is the celebration of a shocking and wonderful comeback, just when it's certain that you've finally been nailed down and buried. Death is serious. Maybe the most serious thing that we should be aware of. But must resurrection be told as a deadly serious story in a deathly stained glass voice? Doesn't it have instead a very special kind of humor? A special kind, even a unique kind. Many jokes, maybe most jokes, require a but. Someone of a particular ethnic group, age group, or sexual profile. Someone at whose expense we say the joke is made. Someone who is insulted or degraded in the telling of the joke, who loses while others gain. But there's another kind of humor. It's the thrilling, slightly crazy kind of humor, the laughter that comes over you at those odd moments when you've been struck by the preposterous fact that you're alive and really here. Today, in spite of all those things that have happened to you, you laugh and no one else knows why. You laugh the way a baby might laugh at a jack-in-the-box. Ta-da! When my son was a baby, he and I used to play what could only be called mortal peekaboo. Sometimes we'd get into it so much, laugh so hard that it seemed like resurrection might be necessary for one of us, usually Dad. Here I am. Here I'm not. Now here I am again. It'd just go wild. I got scolded for that. You're winding him up too much. I was. Peekaboo is a joy that costs us nothing. The humor of the surprise return of resurrection is at no one's expense, unless it's at the expense of death. To witness resurrection scenes, to hear stories tell of coming back to life, enlivens everyone. Even Elmer Fudd and Yosemite Sam get a little extra jolt of life when Bugs gets out and comes back, if only because now they can try to kill him again. It's the same with the story of Jesus. Everyone gains, even if the plans of certain people are spoiled, or their clever traps turn out to be not so perfect, or their fine reasons for killing him prove insufficient to keep him dead. Stories are true in the way that stories are true. Not only do stories come alive when they're told well, a story becomes our life when we dare to really listen. We're filled with it. We're pierced by its nails. We rise with it again. We don't say that cartoons are false. Neither do we confuse them with documentary films. Whereas we know that Bugs Bunny only seems to have died, Luke tells a story of Jesus really dying, but that also leads us to a joyful, almost slapstick return. Whether it really happened or not makes no difference to the telling of the story or the hearing. Jesus, for one, does not explain his reappearance. He doesn't return to teach a method or preach an ideology of resurrection. The story confronts us with Jesus just being Jesus again. All that resurrection dogma comes long after the story, and many of us have all the luck swallowing it that cats do with our green and pink plastic Easter straw. What we need to do is enjoy the resurrection story, to let it be true in the ways that stories are true, without asking it to deliver any facts. For example, Jews do not accept Jesus as the Messiah, to the annoyance of some groups of Christians, but can nevertheless enjoy the story of Jesus the survivor, another Jew who makes it through no matter what they do to him. The Easter story is a gift for everyone. It's not the property of those who boast how they believe on it literally and then get as grumpy as Elmer Fudd with anyone who doesn't. They talk resurrection but seem to live for death. You hear it in their voices and on those cross faces. They warn us, believe or else, but never say, enjoy the story. Enjoy the story. It's yours as much as mine. Bugs Bunny seems to be pretty much unbreakable, but Luke's gospel tells the story of a man who really broke but came alive again, whose new life is accompanied by a new hunger for real food. Jesus does not come back as unbreakable Jesus or super Jesus, a cartoon spaceman, or a ghost. The mystery of resurrection is not like the mystery of an alien visitor or a haunted house or any of these things we call mysteries that mostly confuse or frighten or disorient us. Resurrection is not a disorienting mystery. It's more like the mystery of the punchline, the hidden part of a joke, a mystery that orients rather than disorients us when we hear it, that gives new life and meaning to what was said and done before, as well as to the present. Resurrection is the punchline to the preposterous story of Easter. Orientation must always have to do with the question, where are we now? The Easter story replies that we are here, alive again, today, and that the way through death opens into utter joy. And yes, humor fit for April Fool's Day. New life is mysteriously found. surprisingly given. It may burst in on us with a laugh or wash over us in our tears. It seems to have little to do with our plans or methods. We can't catch it in our traps or tune into it with test patterns. It escapes from all dogmas, like Bugs Bunny does from Elmer Fudd, like Tweety Pie does from Sylvester, like the Roadrunner does from Wile E. Coyote, and all the best that the Acme Corporation has to offer. Easter is a story that shares a new life with those who listen, but no details or timetables for when it's going to happen. Maybe we shouldn't ask such things of a story. No guarantees, no contracts, no deals about never dying if only we'll believe that a story is a fact. Maybe the thing is not to ask for a story to put something in your hands, but rather just to let it echo in your hearing. Listen. Someone is saying, "Peace to you." Cue the cartoon flip. Yowie! April Fools, happy Easter, and amen.